Okay, we're going to begin here on the top of Lamed Tet Amud Aleph. The Mishnah that we're about to read is similar to a Mishnah that we saw before earlier in the Perek, which the Mishnah earlier in the Perek spoke about what you can make matzah from, the grains that are permissible to use for matzah. Over here, we have the same sort of list, but for maror, which is Ve'elu Yirakot Shadam Yotzei Behem Yedeichu Vato BePesach. These are the vegetables one may use for maror on Pesach. First one is Chazeret. What I'll do is I'll read through them here in the Mishnah, and then we'll look at them in the Gemara. As always, the Mishnah has a Hebrew word, a word that was known to the Tanaim in Eretz Yisrael, and the Gemara will take that word and try to translate it into Aramaic to something that's common to them or something that they understood inside of Bavel. So that'll be the first thing that the Gemara does as soon as we finish the Mishnah, is translate each of these items into Aramaic. And as we do that, we'll discuss the meanings of these words. We have Chazeret, Tamcho, Charchavina, Olashin, Ubimaror. So these are the five items that one can use for maror. Yotzim behen, you can utilize them, ben lachim ben yaveshim, whether they are moist or dried out. Avalok vushim, it cannot be pickled or stored in vinegar. Velo shlukim, shlukim generally means overcooked, stewed, or cooked to the point where it becomes a puree. Velo mivushalim, and not cooked on a regular basis. Just to note that sometimes the word shaluk, some places in Shas, some of the Rishonim suggest the word shaluk means undercooked rather than overcooked, but over here it seems to be the consensus that it's overcooked. Umitzarfim the kazayit. If you don't have a kazayit of one of these items, then you can take a piece of all of these items and bring them together to get to the kazayit that you need for maror. V'yotzin bekelach shalahen. And you can utilize the stalk, not just the leaves of these items, but the stalks as well. Ubit demai. And you can utilize demai, umayser rishon shenila trumato, umayser sheni v'ekdei shenifdu. These are three items that we also saw in the previous Mishnah. Again, these are a repeat of the items that we saw in that Mishnah, in the Mishnah in Erevin, the Mishnah in Brachot, in that these are repeats of items that are a chidush because they are somewhat subpar performance of a mitzvah. Demai is utilizing produce of an alma aretz that we suspect of not having trumato maserot removed from it. Umayser rishon shenila trumato is the case of umayser rishon which has Trumat Maser taken off of it, but not Trumat Gedolah. And Maser Sheni Vekdei, Shenivdu, where we Nivdu, but they are take off the Karen and not the Chomesh. That's the Chiddush that we saw with these three items in the previous Mishnah. It's a similar type of list that we find here. So now the Gemara goes to define each of the items that's found in the Mishnah. And the first one is Chazeret. Chazeret, Gemara says, is Chasa. Chasa, which is well known as lettuce, or for some it's romaine lettuce, but it's clearly the definition of the word. Olashin are hindavi, which are endives. Again, that's pretty clear that that's the translation of the word. Tamcho is interesting. The translation of tamcho, according to Jastrow and others, is something like Cheraville. There are those that translate tamcho as horseradish, which is where they get the source in the Mishnah for the idea of horseradish. That is a very difficult translation of the word for a number of reasons. One of the reasons is that it probably was not indigenous to Eretz Yisrael or Bavel, and it would be unlikely that that was what was mentioned in the Mishnah in terms of horseradish. The second thing is, there's an article, actually, if someone wants to read it, in the tradition from a botanist that discusses the horseradish and the derivation of horseradish and how it entered into the halacha in terms of being used for maror, but it's pretty clear that it's a late addition and is really brought in places where they cannot get the leafy vegetables at this time of year. It's where the ground is still frozen. There's not a chance that they can grow these types of vegetables in a fresh way. And so you're talking about root vegetables, and they're thinking about something there with a root vegetable, and that's where the development of horseradish comes from. So horseradish is very precarious in terms of using for maror on Pesach, both because it's difficult to see that that was what was mentioned in Eretz Yisrael or in Bavel, as well as the fact that it really enters into the lexicon of the poskim very late in time, and is not there until we reach that point where they're having trouble finding items to use for maror. In addition, horseradish has two other issues which are raised by Arthur Schaffer in his article about the horseradish, which I sent out, which is number one, that horseradish is not bitter, but rather harif. It's strong, it's hot, but it's not bitter. And number two is that the Rabbeinu Tam, based on the Mishnah, says that the Mishnah says you can use the kelach, you can use the stalk, and we know the Gemara discusses the leaves, but that means only the stalk and the leaves are good, but not roots, and roots may not be used. And he makes a comment that one must remove the roots of the lettuce because they do not qualify as maror. And obviously that would present a great difficulty with regards to horseradish, which it itself is a root. And therefore, many of the poskim who did allow horseradish only allowed the parts of the horseradish that were above ground, which is the leaves and the stem that was above ground, not the root itself. And so for that reason, it seems that horseradish is unlikely to be maror. I would say people do have the minhag to use horseradish, probably should eat romaine lettuce to be yotze, the mitzvah maror. But there is some value to eating the horseradish because of the experiential nature of the night of Pesach. That is that the horseradish elicits a certain reaction, whether it's tearing or the difficulty of eating it. And that's also important for the children because part of the night is not just the eating of the maror and doing the mitzvah maror, but it's a demonstrative mitzvah. It's an experiential mitzvah. And the children seeing one with the horseradish and the effects that it has on the individual might have some value on the night of Pesach, even though you'd have to eat the romaine lettuce to be yotze in terms of the din of maror. This can be in addition to that and separate from that. After you finish the romaine lettuce, you can have some horseradish to have that experiential aspect. Amar Rabbi Bar Chana, so this tamcho, he says, is tamchato, shema. So again, the Aramaic is a somewhat similar to the Hebrew word of tamcho. He calls it tamchato, which again is either a whorehound or sheravil. Charchavino, which was the third item that was mentioned in the Mishnah, Amar Shimon Lakish, that is at Zvato de Dikla. That is the palm ivy, or the creeper that goes around the palm tree. And we're going to see that these types of ivies show up a lot as options for using for maror. Ube maror. The last thing mentioned in the Mishnah is this maror, which is mirirto. So here, again, the Rishonim disagree. Some of the Rishonim say mirirto is a specific bitter herb that we're speaking about. Others say that this is a catch-all phrase. Maror means mirirta, any bitter herb. Anything that is bitter will qualify over here. That might be another way to get horseradish into the Mishnah by saying it's captured by this generic term at the end of the Mishnah called maror or mirirta. So now we're going to have a series of Tanaic statements about what you can use for the maror, and we're going to have some of the items that we saw in our Mishnah plus additions to those items. So the first one is Tanar Bar Karpara. Elu Yirakot Shadam Yotzei Behen Yedecho Vato BePesach. These are the vegetables you can use for maror and Pesach. Beulashin, which was mentioned in our Mishnah, endives. Utamcho, again, what was mentioned in our Mishnah, which was the sheravil, the whorehound. Behar Chalin. Har Chalin are thistles, some sort of thistle bush that has a bitter side to it. And then Bir Charchavinin, which we also saw in our Mishnah, it's plural of the Charchavina that we saw in our Mishnah, which is the palm ivy. Ube Chazerin, again, is similar to our Mishnah, it's the Chazeret just in plural. Now, Rav Yehuda Omer, Af Olshe Sadeh Volshe Gina. That not only are Olashin, which are these endives, usable, but even if they have what we call Shem Levi, they have a descriptive term that's attached to it. So also the endives of the field and endives of the garden. All of those endives qualify and are good as endives and qualify as maror. V'chazeret. And then chazeret. The Gemara says, Oshe gina v'chazeret hatana la reisha. Why is he adding in Oshe gina and chazeret? Those were already mentioned in the reisha. I mean that there's no addition here of when you mention Oshe gina and chazeret. Those are items that we know explicitly. The only thing he really added over here was Oshe sadeh. So then why did he mention these two terms that are found in the Tanaic works? This is what he meant to say. Ah, Oshe Sadeh, Ki Oshe Gina V'Chazeret. The Oshe Sadeh have the same definition or same classification for Maror as do the Oshe Gina, which are the Stam Olashim, the Stam endives, which are the endives of the garden, as well as the Chazeret as the lettuce. Rabbi Meir adds an additional item that can be used for Maror. He says, Af Asvas V'Torah, Umar Yiro'ar. So he mentions these terms, which are cryptic terms. We don't really have a definition for them, but he mentions them. But then we get a emendation from Rabbi Yossi, which is Amalei Rabbi Yossi, Asvas v'Torah echadhu. First of all, this Asvas and Torah are one item. That's number one. Umar zehu yiroar. And this mar is yiroar. So instead of there being four items that are mentioned by Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi says there are actually two items mentioned here. There's Asvas v'Torah, which is one, and mar yiroar, which is number two. So now the Marze Yurar in the Jastro translates that as ferule, F-E-R-U-L-E. And the Asvas V'Torah is what Rashi says here is some sort of bitter vegetation or bitter herb. We don't have a definition of it. If you look on the left side of the Gemara there, we have Sfarim Acherim. The definition is Chad Hu. That's the way the Marshal has the Girsa, which is Chad Hu. That all of these items I mentioned, Rabbi Meir, are one item. Umar Hu, and it's bitter. Mezeh Umar Yurar. And that's what's called Mar Yuar. So according to the Marshal, there's actually not even two items here. There's only one item once Rabbi Yossi gets through with it, and that is this Mar Yuar, which is the Asvas V'Torah, which happens to be bitter, and that's called Mar Yuar, which is this ferule that we mentioned. Tana de Beis Shmuel, Eli Rakot Shadam Yotzei Behen Yotei Chavato V'Pesach. Again, we have another list from the Beit Midrash of Shmuel, or we have some sort of Tanaic work from the Beit Medrash of Shmuel, which is somewhat difficult because Shmuel is an Amora found in Bavel, so it's unlikely that he had Tanaic works of his own because all the Tanaic works come from Eretz Yisrael. So Tana de Beir B'Shmuel means there was a brayta of some sort that was brought in the Beit Midrash of Shmuel, which is, these are the items, B'chazeret, like in our Mishnah lettuce, Olashin, like our Mishnah endives, U'betamcho, like our Mishnah, which again was the Sherevil or the Whorehound, U'becharvinin, like our Mishnah, which is the palm ivy, and now he adds on additional items. He says, U'becharginim, which is, the word gina is buried in there, and then you have charginim, which is a garden ivy, and behar dufnin. Behar dufnin is wall ivy. So here we said before that you're going to see this ivy appear again. Here you have three different ivies that are qualified as maror. You have the palm ivy, the garden ivy, and the wall ivy, all of which are edible items that would qualify to be used for maror. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af chazeret yulin, the lettuce of either the hills or the lettuce of the thistles, v'chazeret galin, which is the lettuce either of the gardens or the willows, kiyotzebehen, are similar to them. So Rabbi Yehuda says these additional items, these additional chazeret, are also qualify as maror because they're under that subset of chazeret. Rabbi Yehuda, others have a girsa of Rabbi Yehuda, Blomer Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, af arkabalin, that we would include in this also the arkabalin, which are prickly palm ivy. V'chazarti al kol tamidav, Bilal says, I looked for all the Tamidim of Rabbi Lezer, Bikashili Chaver, and I wanted to find someone else who had had this Mesorah or heard this from him, Velo Matzati, and I never found anybody who agreed with me or had heard this Mesorah. Shibati Fnei, Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, when I came before Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, Hodeh Lidvari, or Lidvarai, he agreed to what I stated. So here I found someone else who had heard the same thing from Rabbi Eliezer as I did, which is that this Arkabalin, which is the prickly palm ivy, was good for Maror. Now we have Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Koshish lo Saraf. Anything that has the word Saraf that's used in the Gemara generally means a sap. Over here, it's a whitish liquid that escapes or emanates from the leaf when you cut it. You cut a lettuce and then you squeeze the item, there's a white liquidy item that comes out. That's what the Gemara is Saraf over here. Something that is acrid or pungent, and that's what gives the bitterness to the item that you're using. Yochanan ben Brukah Omer, kol shepanav machsifim, that if its color of this leaf is that it's pale or faded, and not, as Rashi says, a full color of green, but rather a pale or faded shade of green, that's what we're looking for over here. And that's going to tell you that it's bitter. That's an indication of the bitterness of the item. Chemomim, others say, and this really brings it all together, which is kol yerek mar, anything that's bitter, yesh lo sraf, has this whitish liquid that comes out of it, upanav machzifim, and it has this pale or faded complexion to it. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so then Rabbi Yochanan says about all that we saw in this braita, midivrei kulan, from all of them that we can learn, nomad yerek mar, that a bitter yerek or vegetable that you can use for maror, yesh lo sraf upanav machzifim. Or basically, he's saying exactly what the achirim say, and Amar Rav Huna, halacha ki achirim. The halacha is like the achirim, that what is used for maror has those properties. It has to be mar, it has to be bitter, it has to have this whitish liquid that can be squeezed out of it, it has to have seraf, and it has panav machsifim, it has to have a pale or faded complexion to it or color to it. Ravina, Ashkechei de Ravacha Brei de Rava. Ravina found Ravacha Brei de Rava, Tava Mehadar Amirirta. He was searching for Merirta. Merirta is the last item mentioned in our Mishnah. The last item mentioned in our Mishnah is Maror, and the Gemara translated Maror into Aramaic as Merirta. So he was searching for this Merirta. Why are you searching for this Merirta? The Mirint Ve? You think because it's the most bitter of the items listed in the Mishnah, that's why you're searching for it? V'achazeretnan. Our Mishnah enumerates Chazeret, first of all, as one of the items. And number two, even better than that, it's the first item mentioned in the list. V'tana de Beishmuel, Chazeret. And Tana de Beishmuel says that the best item to use for Maror is Chazeret. Rama Ushaya, Mitzvah b'Chazeret. Ushaya says the Mitzvah is to do it b'Chazeret again because it's the first item in the list of the Mishnah, which seems to make sense. And in addition to that, we're going to see now in the Gemara, we have drashot on the word chazeret, And so because of that, it becomes the optimal vegetable to use for maror. Vamarava, my chazeret. What's the meaning of chazeret? Chasa. As we saw above, the chazeret is chasa, is lettuce. And now we have a play on the word chasa, is my chasa, to chas rachmono ilavan. That Hashem had mercy upon us. And that's why he took it as a out of Mitzrayim. So there's a value to eating chazeret, whose translation to Aramaic is chasa, which is a play on the Hebrew word lachos, to chas, to have mercy. And therefore, that's why the optimal solution or the optimal vegetable to use is maror. Number one, because it's the first in the Mishnah. And number two is because it has this drusha associated with it. V'amar Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Lama nimshlu Mitzrayim kemaror. Why are Mitzrayim called maror? Because it says there, vayimaruru et chayehem. Why does it say that or use that terminology to describe Mitzrayim? V'amar lecha, ma maror ze shetchilato rach v'sofer kasheh, that this maror, which in the beginning is soft, and if you leave it there long enough, it hardens. Rashi on the Amud Bet says harden doesn't mean that hardens like we would say into wood, but harden here means it thickens. The stalk thickens significantly. Af Mitzrayim, so too Mitzrayim acted in a similar fashion. Tchilatan raka, in the beginning they were soft, or they were nice to us, and they hired us. They paid us wages for the work that we did. So fan kasher, in the end, they enslaved us and didn't pay anything for our work. So now you have a play on the word maror and chaso, and that's why we are favoring that item. So Amarlei, so he says back to him, Hadrabi, as I take it back, I'm not going to search for this merirta anymore because I see that the optimal solution here is chazeret. Amarlei Rav Ruchumi le'abaye. Ruchumi says to Abaye, v'mai tahai maror min yaraku. How do you know when the Torah uses the term maror that is referring to a vegetable? We've taken it for granted. The Mishnah says, Elohena yirakot. These are the vegetables you can use for maror. Who says that it's a vegetable? Ema merirta de kufya. Why can't you use this is a bitter, something that's bitter, but it's the bile or the gall of a kufya, which is a type of fish. Fish that, and so the translation as a kolias. So it's the bile or the gall of such a fish that is bitter. Why can't we use that item? Gemara says, because it says dumya de matzah. We have a hekesh between matzah and maror, which is a matzot umrorim yochuo. So therefore, matzah and maror are connected. And ma matzah gedulei karka, just like matzah derives from something that grows from the ground, af maror gedulei karka. So too, when we're talking about maror, we have to talk about something that grows from the ground. So that would preclude the fish bile or the fish gall, because that doesn't grow from the ground. That's number one. So the Gemara says, v'ema hirduf, why don't you use oleander? That would be a solution here, which is it's something that grows from the ground, but it's not a vegetable. So why can't we use that for maror? The Gemara says, dumya de matzah. Ma matzah min zra'im, af maror min zra'im. So just like matzah comes from a vegetable or vegetation, so af maror min zra'im. So too, the maror has to be a type of vegetation, but not this hirdof, which is more of a wood or an eitz. It's actually a branch of a tree, as Rashi says. Eitz shimtik bo moshet mei mara. It's the branch that Moshe used to sweeten the waters in mara. Ve'ema hirzifu. Why don't you use hirzifu? Now hirzifu qualifies. It's a vegetation. It grows from the ground. It's a min zera. It has all the qualifications. The only problem is it's samamavet lebehema. It's poisonous for animals. And it's not regularly consumed by human beings. It's something that's very bitter. It's not usually consumed by human beings. But maybe we could use that. Gemara says there, no, dumya de matzah. Ma matzah nikachet b'mekesef ma'aser sheni. Just like matzah, the items that you use there are items that could be bought with the monies of ma'aser sheni. Af maror, so too the items that are used for maror have to be items that can be nikach b'mekesef ma'aser sheni. They can be bought with the monies of ma'aser sheni. And the qualification to be bought with the kesef ma'aser sheni, it has to be dulei karka, it has to be a pri. It has to be some sort of fruit, vegetation that grows, something that's eaten, pri ma'achal, something that's normally eaten. Since this herzufu is not normally eaten, therefore it's disqualified. Now, Tosafot does point out that we could disqualify it for a different reason, the same reason that they disqualified in Lulav HaGuzel, which is that it has poison in it. And since it has poison in it, we don't eat it because Darcheh Darcheh Noam, that Hashem, or the ways of the Torah, are sweet and pleasant, and therefore we don't engage in mitzvot that ask a person to do something that is either dangerous, uncomfortable, or something that is not considered to be in the realm of normalcy. Because the pasuk says, Darcheh Darcheh Noam, that the ways of the Torah are pleasant. And therefore it would be booted just because of Darcheh Darcheh Noam. That would exclude here Zifu. Again, even though it's edible for human beings, but since it's poisonous for animals, that's enough for us to exclude it for that reason. Just says that the Gemara had a different reason over here, which is this connection to Maaser Sheni. So Amalei Rabba Bar Rav Chanan Labai, Ema Maror Chad. The Torah says Maror is one. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Why do you think there's only one type of Maror? Mirorim Ktiv, because it says a Matzot Mirorim, so Yochlu. So Mirorim is in plural there. So it must be there's more than one Maror. So he says Marim Ktiv. Says fine, Ema Marim Tzrei. What's the minimum amount for a plural is two. So say that means that there's two types of Maror. Our Mishnah has five types of Maror. Why don't you have two? So it's a Dumya de Matzah. Ma Matzah meaning Marbe. Just like by Matzah, we have multiple species or types that can be used for the Matzah. Those are the five grains. Af Maror meaning Marbe. So to by Maror, there are multiple items that can be used for Maror. And again, in a parallel way, there are actually five things that are mentioned in the Mishnah here as well that can be used for Maror. Amar Rav Bar Huna Amar Rav. Yirakot Shamru Chachamim. Adam Yotzei Behem Yedei Chuvato BePesach. Kulan Nizra'in Be'aruga Achat. That all the items that Chachamim say that you may utilize in Pesach from Maror, they all can be grown together. Which basically means that they're not Kilayim with each other. That would indicate that the list in our Mishnah, those five items that are mentioned in our Mishnah, are not Kilayim with each other. Lememra. So that's what the Gemara says. From this you will conclude, the late Behum Mishum Kilayim. There is no Kilayim between them because they could all be planted together. The Meiti Ravo, is that really true? We have a Mishnah from Kilayim, which says, Chazeret, Chazeret Galin. When you're talking about the lettuce, or Chazeret Galin, and the lettuce of the garden, again, the term here, the lettuce of the garden, or lettuce of the willow, it has a Shem Levi. It's not just lettuce, it's lettuce with a defining term, a noun phrase here, that includes an adjective describing what type of lettuce we're speaking about. So you would have thought that lettuce and garden or willow lettuce are two different species. The Mishnah is telling you, no, that they're one species. Olashin v'olshei sadeh. Talking about olashim are the endives. And before we said that the endives mean endives of the garden and the endives of the field. So those, again, you would think they're two species. No. Krishin, which are a leek, ukrishei sadeh, and the leek of the field. Again, same thing, that they're considered to be one. Kuzbar, kuzbar sadeh, coriander and coriander of the field, or wild coriander. Chardal, mustard, v'chardal mitri, and Egyptian mustard. Udalata mitzri, an Egyptian gourd, v'arumutza. Rumutza comes from coals or ashes, and that is that they used to stuff this gourd into the ashes, and it's because it's a bitter gourd. So that's what it means here. It's a bitter gourd, and the gourd of the mitzri, which again, you would think were two different species. They used to stuff it into the ashes to sweeten it that way, and so that's why it's known as the Dalata rumutza. Einam kilayim zebezed. The Mishnah says they're not kilayim one with the other. So now, what would you think? The way the Mishnah is laid out is it's giving you pairs of items, which is Chazeret v'Chazeret Galim in, Chazeret v'Olashim lo. The Mishnah is not telling you that all of these items are not considered to be Kilayim. The Mishnah is simply telling you that each of the pairs, even though they have a slightly different name, are still not considered to be Kilayim. And if you want to say to me, no, you got it wrong. It's not talking about in pairs here, but rather the whole Mishnah is saying that everything there is not Kilayim. V'hama Rav zugot zugot k'tani. We have an explicit statement from Rav saying that the Mishnah is written in such a way that it's pairing off the items that are not kilayim with each other. Now the Gemara has to go back to the original statement of Amar Rav Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Rav's original statement that all of these yirakot for Maror can be planted together. And he says, what does that mean? Mai Nizra'in? Damar Rav? What does he mean in that statement when it means it can be planted? Nizra'im kihil chatan. They can be planted according to the halacha. So now, what does that mean, planted according to the halacha? The Gemara is going to ask on that. We already have a Mishnah that tells us how you do that. Kehil Chatan Tanina. That's a Mishnah in Shabbat that we have as well as in Kilayim. Something that we worked on when we did it in the Gemara in Shabbat. This is a very complex sugya. We're not going to go into it today because it's really the sugya that's found in the Gemara in Shabbat. But it says, Arugah Shisha Tvachim. If you have a garden patch that's 6x6 Tvachim, Zorim Betocha Chamisha Zeronim. You can plant inside of it five different species without it being a problem of Kilayim. Along each border, you can plant one species without the corners being planted. You leave the corners empty. And along each border, you plant one species. That gives you four. And in the center of this square, you can also plant a fifth species. And they will not be Kilayim one with the other. There are many difficulties with this Mishnah that have to be dealt with, including the fact that generally we say that you have to have at least three Tfachim between different things that are planted. And over here, that's impossible because if you plant the middle and you plant something around the side, then they're by definition, they're less than three tefachim away from each other because you're talking about a 6x6 tefach square. So from the center point, that's three tefachim in each direction. So they can't be more than three tefachim away from each other. The way that many of the Rishonim deal with that is that they planted on along the border. They're not planted within the 6x6, but they're planting along the borderline of it. So that's how you get it out, and you plant one thing in the center. Others deal with different ways, like Tosafot over here says the problem here is not yinika, not drawing sustenance or cross-pollinating in the ground, but rather the problem of your buvia. Looks like when they grow bigger, they're going to look like they're all mixed together and they're too close to each other. So this was the Mesorah that Chazal said, that 5 was the maximum amount that you could plant, and not more, because otherwise you could plant more in here. And it's really based on Gzeirat HaKatuv that you're allowed to do this, the limud in the Gemara and Shabbat. Leaving that aside about all the machlokot Rishonim here, about how far they have to be apart and how much of the corners have to be left open, so on and so forth, which is a significant issue. The basic premise here is that you can apply 5 species within a 6x6 space. So that's what it means here. These 5 items that I mentioned in our Mishnah, they can be planted halachically within a 6x6 square and not be a problem of kilayim. Arba al arba ruchot aruga. You can plant the 4 of them on the 4 edges of this patch, v'chat b'emts and one in the middle. So madutayma, what if I have thought, hani milei bizarin? This is only true, that din from the Mishnah and kilayim is only true bizarin, b'cereals, with grains. But yirakot lo, by vegetables, that would not count. Kamash malon. That teaches us that it equally applies to vegetables, the memra. So that makes it tell you, yirakot alima mizraim. That sounds like yirakot have less of a problem with kilayim than zraim. Zraim here means, seeded items, but the seeded items they're talking about here usually mean cereals or grains that they're speaking about, as opposed to yirakot, as opposed to vegetables. Vahatnan. Don't we have a Mishnah, kol minei zraim, ein zraim be'aruga achat? All types of zraim you cannot plant in one aruga. Kol minei yirakot, zraim be'aruga achat. But all types of vegetables, you can plant in aruga achat. If that's the case, it would sound like zraim are a bigger problem of kilayim, not yirakot. So over here, you're telling me, oh, this is the chiddush of the halacha, is that by yirakot, you're telling me that you can plant it like this. That's not a chiddush. If you could already plant these types of cereals or grains that way, certainly you can plant vegetables that way, because vegetables have less of an issue of kilayim, as we say in this Mishnah over here. So madutema. So the Gemara says, no, this is what I would have thought. Hani maror min zraim ninhu. That this maror has to be a type of zera, that has to be a cereal or a grain. Mashmalon, that it's not. The Gemara says, wait a minute. Zarim sakad atcha? How could you think that this maror has come from zera? Vahatnan. Our Mishnah starts out, Eluhein hayirakot. These are the vegetables that you can use. So it's clear that they are vegetables. Batani bar kapara, yirakot. And we have a brito, or the Mishnah from bar kapara that says yirakot. Batani de beishmo, yirakot. So we have 3 different versions or Tanaic works that are telling us the same thing, which is that maror is a type of yerek. So why would you ever have a havamina to think otherwise? So Gemara says, all right, this must be the reason. Chazeret itzrichale. They needed for chazeret the lettuce that's mentioned in our Mishnah. Since the end, it's going to become hard. Again, not hard, because as you see here, this is where Rashi says it. Lakshot is kelach shela nase av. Stalk becomes very thick. Right? So native la rav chotvei. Therefore, you're going to have to leave more spacing. And you could not put the chazeret inside of this patch. So kamash malon, that is not true. Lava marabi osi brachanina kelach shel kruv. When you're dealing with a stalk of the cabbage, shehuksha, that became hardened, became thick, marchivin lo beit rova. Then you have to plant a full beit rova. Beit rova is a measurement of an area that you would plant, but you have to give it its own patch by itself. You have to plant its own patch because of the problem of the thickening stalk makes it that you can't place it inside of this aruga. Alma came in the sofalak shot because by the kruv, where in the end it's going to become hardened or thickened, we say, yavin le rab chotvei, we give it more space and we say it cannot be put in these tight quarters because of the problems of kilayim. So too over here, the chazeret, which has a similar property in its stalk, maybe we'd have to leave it more space, and it would not be allowed to be planted in this aruga of 5 zerunim that can be planted in our grove 6x6, k'mashmon, that it can. And the answer is that chazeret is not similar to kruv, and therefore chazeret can be planted along with the other 4 items that are mentioned in our Mishnah, together with them in a single patch, and not be a problem of kilayim. And the chiddush again being that even though chazeret looks like kruv, and kruv cannot be put in such a patch, nevertheless, chazeret is different or differentiated enough that we don't say that, despite the fact that its stalk hardens or thickens similar to that of the kruv. Right now, the Mishnah said, Yotzim ben ben lachim ben yveshim, that you can be yotze by them whether they are moist or dried out. So Amar Rav Chisra qualifies that statement in the Mishnah and says, Loshona lebekelach, that's only if you're talking about the stalk. The stalk can be used both moist and dried out. Because of the thickness of the stalk, even when it's dried out, it still maintains the taste of maror. Aval balin, if you're using the leaves, then lachinin, only if they're moist can they be used. Yveshim lo, if they're dried out, you cannot use them because they're so thin that once they're dried out, they lose any semblance of being marur. Baha miktani sefer, didn't the Mishnah, after it talks about Yveshim and lachim, say, bekelach shelahen, with their stalks, implying michlau deresha alin, that the first part of the Mishnah is talking about leaves, because the latter half of the Mishnah, where she mentions stalks explicitly. The Gemara says, no, perushe kamifarish. It's explaining, it's an expanded explanation of what we said before. Kiktani, ben lachim uben yveshim. When we mentioned this thing about moist and dry, that's a kelach. That was referring to the stalks. And that's what it means, that when a Mishnah mentioned kelach shalem, that you can be yotze, is when they are both lachim and yveshim. Meitve, is that really true? We have a braita that says yotzim behen ube kelach shalem. You can be yotze with them and with their stalks. So now, if it says them and their stalks, that means that the them is something besides the stalks, and likely is the leaves. So then, ben lachim, ben yveshim, whether they're moist or dried out, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir makes it clear here that he does not differentiate between the alim and the stalks, because he says they and their stalks have the same din. Chamim ormim, lachim yotzim, ben yveshim, ben yotzim. If they are moist, you can use them. They're dried out, you cannot use them. Vishavin, they both agree, shiotzim ben kimushin. If they are withered, but they have some moisture left in them, then they agree that you can use that. Avalok vushim, you may not use something that's pickled or in vinegar, avalok shtukim, and not something that's overcooked. Volom vushalim, something that's cooked in a normal manner. Klalo shodavar, the basic principle we have here is, koshesh botam maror, yotzim both. If that's the flavor of maror or bitterness in it, then you yotze. Koshesh botam maror, anything that does not have the flavor of more, ein yotzim bo, you cannot use it on Pesach. So here we have a pretty clear, explicit statement from Rabbi Meir that the ben yelachim, ben yiveshim, applies not only to the kelach, to the stalk, but also applies to the alim. And he must be the author of our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir, because our Mishnah says yiveshim and lachim are okay. The Chachamim don't agree with that. The Chachamim only think moist items are okay, yiveshim are not okay. So Rabbi Meir is clearly the author of our Mishnah. And in being the author of our Mishnah, he doesn't differentiate between Alim and Kelach. So that would go against what we just said over here. So Targuma Akelach says, now have that focus on Kelach. When Rabbi Meir says, Ben Lachim, Ben Yeveshim, he doesn't mean about everything. Because there were two items that are mentioned there. It's Shelahen, Kelach Shelahen. It's them and their stalks. So when it says them and their stalks, Lachim applies to both of them. But Yeveshim only applies to the stalks, not to the other items or the leaves. So Tanabanan, Ein Yotzim Behen Kimushim. You cannot be yotze the mitzvah with kimushim with those items that are withered. Shom, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Tzadok amru, yotzim ben kimushim. You can use them when they are withered. So now we have that machloket, which is a machloket whether you can use these kimushim, you can use these withered items. The one who says yes, it's because it's not completely dried out. It has some moisture left in them, and therefore it has the flavor of maror. But the other opinion, you're not yotze with them because withered is the same as being dried out, and dried out leaves just don't work. Can you use maror of Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim? The mitzvah of maror. Aliba to Rabbi Akiva, according to Rabbi Akiva, loti bailach. There's no question here. Hashto b'matzah de'uraito nofik. By matzah, which is a din min haTorah, you can be yotze with Meister Sheni in Yerushalayim. Be maror derabanan mi boy. When we're talking about maror, which is only a din derabanan, there, why would you even have a question? Now, there are two ways to read what's d'oraita and what's the rabbanon here. The way that most people would read it is that d'oraita means that matzah is a mitzvah d'oraita bizman hazeh, because it's a chovat matzah independent of the korban of Pesach, whereas maror is integrally connected to the korban of Pesach, and therefore maror today is only a din d'rabbanon. So that would be the way that most people probably would explain it, and Rashi says, I heard that explanation, I think it's wrong, because he says, if it was really bizman hazeh, when mimaski maisu sheni Yerushalayim, there is no Meister Sheni Yerushalayim if we're talking about Zman HaZeh. So that doesn't make so much sense. It says even according to the Mandamer that does say Meister Sheni, there is today, it still is problematic. So the explanation of the right and the Rabbanon over here is that they're Meister Sheni. By Matzah, you're talking about grains. Grains have Trumot and Masrot min haTorah. They have an requirement of having the Gancha, Tiroshcha, V'Yitzarecha. The Gancha has a requirement of Trumot and Masrot min haTorah. So that's what it means, d'oraita. D'rabbanon over here is the maror. Maror is a yerek, a vegetable. Vegetables, according to almost everyone in the Rishonim, it's almost a unanimous that yerek is only a din d'rabbanon in Trumot and Masrot. That's what it means. If Rabbi Akiva is willing at a din d'oraita level of Meister Sheni, d'oraita, to tell you that you can use that for matzah, then certainly he would allow by Maror, which has a din meister sheni midrabanan. He certainly would let you use that because underlying it is d'oraita. You could use it b'chol moshavot. You could use it anywhere because it's not even chayav midrabanan. So here midrabanan impose on that in some ways this meister sheni din, and therefore we're going to say that for sure Rabbi Akiva would say by Maror he would allow it. So lo tibaylach. So therefore according to Rabbi Akiva you would not ask the question. But ki tibaylach, when you would ask the question is according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who earlier on told us that Maaser Sheni Yerushalayim is problematic because it says, Lo achalti be'oni mimenu, because I didn't eat it with oni with an aleph. And then oni means you can eat matzah even when you're an onain. And we said by Maaser Sheni, it says, Lo achalti be'oni mimenu, that Maaser Sheni cannot be eaten in that way. And for that reason, Rabbi Yossi Aglili precludes it. Rashi over here says that he precludes it because of Mechol Moshavot Techem. It's not what the Gemara says over there. Back on Lamed Vav Amud Bet, Tosafot does ask the question why he doesn't preclude it from B'chol Moshavot Techem to exclude Maaser Sheni. But over there, in the end, he basically answers that Rabbi Yossi Aglili could have held of Rabbi Lazar's din as well, and that Maaser Sheni could have had a din of B'chol Moshavot Techem, and that's why he only uses B'chol Moshavot Techem by Bikurim and not by Maaser Sheni. But Rashi brings that as the reasoning behind Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So over here, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, what's the din? B'matzah d'oraita hu d'lo nofik. Matzah, which is a din d'oraita, that's where Rabbi Yossi Aglili says you can't utilize Maaser Sheni. Av maror d'rabbanan nofik. But by maror, which is d'rabbanan, he'd be more makel and allow you to use it. O dilma, kol d'takinu rabbanan kein d'oraita takun. That whatever their chachamim established, they used the paradigm in a Torah, and then they copy that paradigm in a Torah when they instituted something d'rabbanan. And that's so too over here, just like matzah, which is the paradigm midoraita, you cannot use Maaser Sheni. So too over here by Maror Derabanan, even though it's only Derabanan, you cannot use Maaser Sheni. Mara says, Amar Rava Mistavro, it makes sense, Matzah Maror. Matzah Maror should have the same din. So now, according to the way our Gemara has the Girsa, that means that Rabbi Yossi Aglili is going to say Matzah and Maror have the same din, and you cannot use Maaser Sheni. So that's the way Rashi reads it, that's the Girsa we have in our Gemara. If you look at Rabbeinu Hananel, Rabbeinu Hananel says that the whole question is according to Rabbi Akiva, not according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, it's according to Rabbi Akiva. And now the conclusion of the Gemara isn't within the position of Rabbi Akiva. It's clear that the Rabbeinu Hanano had a different girsa in our Gemara, and he has over here Amar Rabba instead of Amar Rava. According to the girsa of Rabbeinu Hanano, this is in the position of Rabbi Akiva. And therefore, since it says the matzah is mutar in Maaser Sheni according to Rabbi Akiva, then certainly Maror is also mutar using Maaser Sheni. Now the Gemara moves on into the next Mishnah, which is Ein shorin et hamorsan l'taral gerolim. One may not soak the bran for the chickens because there's a high possibility or likelihood that it could become chametz. Aval chotim. You're allowed to scald it or pour boiling hot water over the dough or the kemach because that will not allow it to rise or become chametz because the scalding hot water suppresses the leavening of the item and causes it to cook immediately without it ever rising. Eisha lo tishre et hamorsan. A woman may not soak this bran to cake on her body or to utilize it as an abrasive against her body, in order to take it with her to the bathhouse. Aval, shafahi bibsara yavesh. What she can do is place it on her wet body while it's dry. So if her body is still wet after she has an immersion, then she can then place this bran on top of her, and that won't be a problem of being machmitz. We don't worry about it there being machmitz. Loyo os adam chitim, a person may not chew on wheat kernels, and then place it on top of his wound as a salve, because there's a high likelihood again of chametz, or you have liquid together with the chita. Because they leaven, and since they leaven, they're problematic. So Tan Rabbanan, these are items that never become chavetz. Number one, hafui, something that's already baked. Vamivushal, something that's already cooked. Vechalut shechalto berotchim, and something that had scalding hot water poured over it. Mivushal. So what about mivushal? Wait a minute. How can mivushal be okay? Ad mevashale mechama. While you're cooking it, the heat, the water starts to heat up. And as the water is heating up, it's going to actually turn into chametz before it reaches the scalding point or the hot point where it can no longer be chametz. Now, we can't say that he's dropping this into ready-boiled water because that would have been the easiest solution over here. The problem with that is that the Bright already tells us there's another category called chalot. Chalot is where you're pouring scalding water onto the item. So the case of mivushal or bishul has to be a case where he's starting from scratch and then heating it up, not a case where it's already reached the point of boiling. And that's what presents the problem over here. So Amar Rav Papa, Rav Papa says, this is how you should read this statement. Ha'afui shebishlok amar. Something that is baked, and then you cook it afterwards, there is no problem of chametz. So you have two different statements here. One is the afui, something that's baked, and then cooked afterwards, that cannot become chametz. And number two is chalut. If you put scalding hot water on the item, it also does not rise. It suppresses the fermentation, the leavening of the item, and therefore you could do it without any problem of chametz. And as Fred raised right here, it's pretty clear from this Gemara that gebroch is not a problem whatsoever. It's clear from the Gemara that if you have something that's a void, something that is already baked, then certainly there's no problem of cooking it afterwards. We're going to see in a second that there is some chashash sometimes, but here we're talking about things or items that are either very early on in the processing, and that's why they have an issue, or something that's not fully cooked. And so when something's not fully cooked, then you have that problem. But today, where we use such thin matzot, things that are barely, I mean, there's not even a chance that they can't be cooked. It's so rare that they can't be cooked because they're so thin that it's very unlikely that gebroch should be a problem. It's a minhag. Whoever has that minhag, they can for sure follow the minhag of their forefathers. But it's a minhag that does not have a strong basis in the Gemara. It might even be against what the Gemara is saying right here, that it's impossible to have chametz come out of something that is afui, something that's already baked. So Tanya, Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda Omer, Kemach shnafal letocho delef. If you have flour into which a drip is falling, you have a drip from the ceiling or the roof that's coming into the flour, afilu kol yom kulo, even if it's dripping all day long, enu balik dechimutz, it'll never leaven, it'll never ferment. Amra papa, that's only true, v'hu da'avid tif l'hadei tif, that if the drops are continuous, one after the other in succession, without any break. And that is because the pressure of the drops hitting on the flour never allows it to rise, never allows it to leaven. Amrei debei Rabbi Shila, vatika shari. So now vatika, as Rashi says, is some sort of machal kemach, some sort of food item or food, a delicacy that was made out of flour. So he says vatika is mutar, vatanya, and we have a brayta that says vatika asur. So when it says lokasho, we can resolve that problem. Depends how you make it. If you make this vatika with oil and salt, that's no problem, because then it's basically mei peirot. And we saw before, mei peirot ain machmitzin, so they can't cause chimutz. On the other hand, if you make it with water and salt, there you see that you have a problem of water and kemach coming together. There's a high likelihood that you have some sort of leavening or problem. So this gemara here is one of the proofs that Tosafot brought back in the gemara to the fact that mei perot ein machmitzin means literally ein machmitzin, period. They never become chametz. It's not like they stop or they go slower or anything like that. It means they don't become chametz whatsoever. So that's the sheet of Tosfot, and one of his proofs is from this gemara over here, where it's clear that if you make this vatika with oil and salt, that you're totally fine. There's no qualifications. That's it. That's all you have to do. Amar Zitra, lo limche inish kidera bekimcha davishna. Person should not line the inside of his pot, of his cooking pot, with kemach, flour that comes davishna, from that which is roasted, where they took the kernels and roasted them to dry them out and then ground them down into flour that you shouldn't use to line the inside of the pot. Dilma lo bashel shapir. There's a possibility that he did not roast them completely or fully, and because of that, they may present a problem in terms of becoming chametz, because if they were not totally dried out when they were roasted, then there was moisture or liquid there that came together with the kemach, and then you might have a problem. So this might be what that type of chashash of gebroch is speaking about, is this idea that there are times where it's not fully cooked, times where it's not fully roasted, and that leaves over a problem that can cause the problems that gebroch is trying to avoid. So because of that, dimon lo bashe shapi v'atu dei chimutz, and then it will come to be chametz. I'm Rav Yosef. V'lichlot inish trei chitei ba'adadei. Person shouldn't pour boiling hot water over two wheat kernels at the same time. Dilma azla chada, because maybe one of them will go, v'yatva b'tziriya d'chaverta, and sit in the crack or crevice of the other one. V'osalik luhu dikula d'maya. Therefore, it doesn't get the stream of hot water being poured over it. Mi'arbaru chuta, from all four directions. V'ate lidei chimutz. And therefore, there's a possibility to become chametz, because the scalding hot water did not hit it over there. All right, I'm going to stop over here. The Gemara continues for a little bit, but this is a good place to stop, and we'll continue with this tomorrow.